John Farnger is in for a corridor today, and it's Māori, well, it's not Māori Men's Health Week, it's Men's Health Week, John, but we're Māori men, so we can talk of it in that vein. Thanks for joining us on the program. Tēnā koe, Chief.
Kia ora, Darryl. Tēnā tātou katoa.
Yamahi. Well, firstly, what are you reading into where we're at here, particularly with diabetes, John? We've spoken about it regularly through this past week for obvious reasons, but how is the Ministry of Health factoring in the high rates that Māori and Pasifika are experiencing with diabetes? What are some of the strategies to alleviate the problem that exists and stem the flow, if you will, John?
Yes, look, I think, Dale, before I get on to talking about the strategies, it is one of our fastest growing health challenges. There's somewhere around 350,000 New Zealanders living with diabetes today. I think that's roughly the population of Bay of Plenty. On average, we get about 40 new diagnoses every day. And type 2 diabetes makes up around 90% of all cases. And as I think you've already discussed on the program today with Rawiri Keenan and others, Māori Pacific, and particularly communities with higher deprivation, experience much higher rates. Back to your question about, what are we doing about it? I think the National Diabetes Roadmap, which was released in March this year, has a lot of emphasis on making sure we're more coordinated, a lot more around earlier detection and diagnosis. Obviously, the earlier we detect these things, the more we can do about it. You've seen alongside that too, improved screening. We're looking to expand the workforce, particularly specialist and community support workforce, increasing access to treatment and technology, and also looking at those wider drivers, around things like food, the environment, inequity. There are particular support programs, kaupapa Māori support programs, for instance, Dale, and community-based services. And, just to acknowledge what Dave Latelli was saying before, what's really important in this area, and in, he was talking in relation to men's health, is engaging with people in our community that look like us and that we can communicate with and that we trust. It's really important that we build trust with our communities, because if you don't build that trust, you're not going to get off first base.
So what about marae-based clinics? Have there been any real thought to establishing them? Because there's a trust model that exists already at our marae, which was illustrated, I guess, best through that COVID challenge when marae became focal points for the vaccination efforts. Has that been a consideration, and is it finding any political favour, more importantly, perhaps political funding to an idea such as that?
Yeah, look, I think we already have, if I look at particularly kaupapa Māori service provision, we already fund a number of Māori places of delivery, including marae. Actually, our biggest area of funding is more around as mobilising services, Dale, because we need to not only have them in places that are accessible, but also continue to mobilise them. But I think more widely, the government's recognised the role of our marae more generally in terms of when we have inclement weathers from climate, for instance, when we've had things like that, emergencies and emergency response. And you've seen that very clearly up in Te Tai Rāwhiti, for instance, where the marae are the absolute hub of not only community activity, but usually government activity when people are going in there trying to support those communities. So, I think there is a broad recognition, and it was strengthened by COVID. And as I said, some of our recent climate events to show that our marae and our communities are really important when it comes to providing support to not only them, their whānau, but also those who live in their communities more broadly.
When we go for these, or tunnel for these innovative ways to connect our people with health services, and this is important, first point of call is to know the problem that exists. And so if we have mobile clinics, if we have marae-focused GPs in rural communities a couple of times in a week, etc., they have to be funded. So when the tono comes, particularly from Māori health organisations, start up a kaupapa like that, how is it being received, bearing in mind we're led to believe that the government favours a one-size-fits-all, we're all the same? So if we go in and say, look, we want a mobile clinic and we want it be it at Hopu Hopu or at a Kura or whatever, it doesn't seem to fit into the one-size-fits-all model. So is a tunnel for resourcing of that type falling on deaf ears, John?
No, and I'm not sure we have got a one-size-fits-all approach. So, you know, I work really closely with Māori Health Services Division in Health New Zealand, for instance, and they're the folks who are commissioning and contracting with, including Māori health providers. And I know they work very closely with them, looking at what does it cost for them to deliver service, what are the particular differences in delivering that service, and when they're contracting, they look at ways to make sure that those things are assessed when they finally land, you know, when they talk about how much they're going to contract for a service. So I'm not sure we do have a one-size fits all. And as I said, I do know that there is certainly a desire, both within Health New Zealand and in Health General, for us to be fostering more innovative ways to do things. If you look at the recent government investment in areas like technology and digitalising things, for instance, it's all about trying to make sure we can get services to people more quickly and more accessibly. So, I think there is work also being undertaken right at the moment to look at what are the innovative community models that are making a difference in areas such as social innovation, for instance. We're doing work with some providers at the moment looking at how is it they get a better result and how is it we can then make sure that the knowledge from that is shared more widely and we make a big difference out there.
So universality is the model when it comes to health funding distribution of the entire pie that is health, runs into billions of dollars. What would you suggest, John, would be a percentage that is directed towards Māori health provision, bearing in mind that universality appears to be the call of the day in this particular political regime?
Well, certainly at the moment, we have just over $1 billion that's part of the Māori Health appropriation. So that's funding specifically targeted towards delivering on Māori Health priorities and needs. What's harder to measure is, and that would be something like, I think, 2% of Vote Health Day. What's harder to measure is Māori use across the whole system, of which there would be considerable. But we certainly have dedicated funding in Māori health. The government's been clear with us that we need to be strong in demonstrating need. And, you know, we've worked with organisations to show that there is disproportionate need, and it's accepted there's disproportionate need, for instance, in areas like mental health, you know, primary healthcare area and that, for instance. And so there are programs where we're responding to that need, so and working with organisations to find the best way to do things. I think that partnering with the local and community organisations is really important because they have insights often we don't have about what it's going to take to reach our people.
We have a holistic approach to health, as Whare Tapawha, for instance, as an example here, but that's not shared with mainstream. Is it, I've used the term Eurocentric a bit this morning, but it does appear that we're forced to adhere to that model. And by separating our health needs from our housing needs, from our income needs, from our food accessibility and sovereignty needs, it goes against the holistic pattern that seems to be a better model for our people's growth and empowerment. How do you think it is justifiable that the government continues to put health over in that box, which and housing in that one, and income levels in that one, without them all coming together, as would be the case, John, I'd suggest, in a Māori model?
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting, Dale. If you look at what the government's trying to achieve in social investment, it's exactly trying to do that. It is trying to look at what are the things we need to be doing to integrate services, not just in health, but in other areas to address that. You know, the interesting thing for me, and it's mostly because I've been around too long, Dale, you know, 20 or 30 years ago when I first started working in Māori health, it was viewed that holistic views of health were seen to be Māori views of health. I actually think there's been a change more generally. So now we have a much broader acceptance that there's a mental well-being component to our health. At the time of our parents, it wasn't necessarily accepted that, you know, mental health was, their generation, it was very much about, well, you know, you just need to get work your way through these things and kind of get everything. You know, we have a much broader understanding now of the impact of our mental health on our overall physical health and well-being. So, and spiritual health, for instance. And I don't think that's just Māori. I think there are increasingly non-Māori views that understand that health is a balance of not only what's happening to you individually and physically, but what's happening mentally, what's happening socially, what's happening in your community. So we now accept that the environment, and understand the environmental impact on our health, for instance, living in crowded conditions in urban areas, for instance. So I think views of health, I think, are more generally moving towards holistic views than they were 25 years ago, for instance.
Yeah, I'd accept that. But it also suggests we've got a hell of a long way to go too, John. I mean, when you say that 2% of vote health goes into Māori interests, again, that's a slap in the face, bearing in mind some would say the treaty implies 50%, as others would say, well, our population base is kicking 17% or thereabouts, so that should be matched by the level of funding going into Māori health initiatives. It seems at times we're forced to be the squeaky wheel in order to get the oil, you know, and so we're raising dissatisfaction with governmental policy almost on a daily, if not hourly, basis. And that could be frustrating to Wellington. It feels at times like politicians feel that our issues are something of an annoyance.
Well, you know, I work in the apolitical public service, Dale. I couldn't possibly comment on that. But look, I would say this, that there are times where the squeaky wheel or the noise is required. I work in an environment where I expect to be challenged from our people outside to make sure we're doing the best we can. And, you know, I think it's important that people have a chance to say, to talk about what their priorities are and what's important to them. I think, you know, from my end, I'm always looking at, so what can we do about it to make a difference? And as I said, I do think there are things that are in place at the moment that are strengths to Māori health. We have a current level of investment in Māori health. We have over 400 Māori health organisations across the country delivering into the system. Is that as far as we want to go? I think there are people absolutely on the outside saying we need to go further, but and it's fine, but I think, you know, let's not forget that we also have organisations working now that make a real difference. And, you know, I'm equally conscious about how do we continue to try and support them and learn from them to do a better job.
Yeah, that all makes sense. We've been talking a lot about diabetes today, but is that the major threat? If you had a list of the 10 most important health issues our people are confronted by, and maybe we can just track men's health, what comes in that list, John?
I think the big ones, if we're looking at impact and Māori ill health, we would be looking at cancers, we would be looking at cardiovascular and heart disease, mental health, particularly health of rangatahi and younger people. Those things would feature very largely in its significant impact. The impact of wider effects on our health, for instance, such as housing, employment, things like that. So those would very quickly get onto your list of 10, I would say, Dale. And diabetes would be one, again, you would identify by itself as a significant impact, not only now, but in terms of where we may be in the future.
Well, thank you. After last night's State of Origin result, I think my mental health needs some addressing today, John.
My mental health's fine. I'm wearing a maroon jersey.
Well, look, I need some funding to address my mental health problems today, John Fanga. I'm not surprised. Thank you for joining us on the program, John. I know these are slightly awkward conversations because I know that deep down you want to go and to bat as hard as you can for Māori, but the governmental processes can at times prove to be a constraint for us to get to where we feel we deserve to be. We continue to bat and we continue to box on because that's our style. Always neat to have a kōrero with you, though, Chief. Thanks very much for your thoughts today.
Hey, kia ora, Dale. And before I go, I just wanted to take a shout-out to our mate Matthew, who I understood wrote a bit of an article in the Men's Health Week website. I know Matt works on a low praise environment, but just a big shout-out. Because, you know, part of addressing men's health is we need to be open and honest enough to share ourselves. So, e mihi ana ki aia, kia koutou.
Tēnā koe. He's just arrived into work. I'll tell him. That John Fanga thinks he's good at times and a lunatic at times. He's eccentric. He's awesome. Thanks very much for joining us, John. Tēnā koe.
Kia ora, Dale.